Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and thank you for joining me for the second part of a three-part story on the life and times of 83-year-old Bill Day. In case you missed part one, allow me to recap. Born in 1925, Bill learned quickly during the Great Depression about the value of hard work. At an early age, he was taught basic construction techniques, and although he seemed destined for construction work, he eventually found himself in retail sales, as we learn this week. Bill enjoyed school and enjoyed learning. This week we learn about his retail experiences and why he left. We learn about his joining the AIF, and among some great stories, Bill shares his story of his part in the Great Cowra Prisoner of War breakout, where he was a guard. Now, here's Bill talking about school. Did you have a favourite subject or subjects? Was there anything in particular you really liked?
Well, maths.
Maths?
Yeah.
Now, most kids would have picked that last.
Yeah. I've always liked figures, whether they had legs to them or not.
We might come and talk a little bit more about the legs on the figures in a short time, but...
I was a tall, gangly kid. I wasn't much good at sport. I wasn't bad at a hop, step and jump, which now they call a triple jump. But otherwise, I... wasn't much good at running, and I was too light for football and too heavy for most other things. And anyway, when I first got into work, it was delivering milk at 6 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. 6 days a week for 10 shillings a week. And, you know, I was working all day as I did the early run on right. A push bike.
On a push bike?
Yeah.
With a
2-gallon can.
Oh.
On one handlebar.
Wow.
And a little half pipe measure inside the can, you know. Everybody used to leave their billies out.
And you'd fill them up with
Yeah.
Gosh.
You'd put a pint in or 2 pints or whatever they wanted. And then I'd deliver my 2 gallons and I'd meet at a prescribed point and. The boss, he had a horse and cart with 2 10-gallon cans in the cart, and I used to keep filling up the 2-gallon can from him. When the run was finished, I had an hour off for breakfast, and then come back and I had to wash up the dairy then, like he was milking the cows, and so... I had to do all the milking machines and the floors and everything. Then I could have a couple of hours off in the middle of the day. 5 o'clock, I had to be on the night run.
And you do it all over again?
Yeah. And but I didn't have to wash the dairy after the night run.
Well, when you first told me you got 10 bob a week, my first thought was, well, today that's not much money, but that was reasonable money then, but I didn't realise the amount of work you had to do for it. That was a lot of work.
Well, most people were working 55, 58 hours
was
a week.
Right?
Yeah. And that was, you know, the norm. And the basic wage at that time was £2.08. Now, the basic wage was every adult male got the basic wage plus extras for trade qualifications or what have you. But the basic wage wasn't all that good either.
No. The money you got, did you get to keep some of that, all of that, or did you have to pass it on to mum or what?
No, that mum got the lot.
Mum got the lot.
For the first 12 months or so, I was only on that milk run for 6 months or a little bit of more, and Dad had worked the fruit season there and couldn't get any more work, so he got work in Shepparton.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to Shepparton. And I got a job in a grocer's shop, Croft's Chain Stores. They had 123 stores around Victoria.
That was big.
And Archie Croft was the boss. And I went into that at 17 and sixpence a week.
So that was an improvement.
That was an improvement, yes. And we worked Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
We had men's day afternoon half holiday. Then we worked Thursday and Friday until 9 o'clock Friday night. And then we had Saturday and Sunday. No, that's right. We worked Saturday mornings, yep. And anyway, I worked there for a while and I was having terrible trouble with the boss. So I threatened to leave. And he said, you can't leave. They'd had the Manpower Act in at that time.
Oh, because the war's on, isn't it?
The war's on.
That's right.
And every job was categorised.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were working on the war effort, like building military camps or things like that, you're on number one
mm-hmm.
priority.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, farming was next and so forth until the bottom of the list was shop assistants.
Which is where you were.
Yeah.
Right.
And anyway, old Dick used to say, you can leave if you like, but I'll have you back the next week. Anyway, I said, you've got another thing coming. Anyway, that's right. Archie Croft came up, the big boss. And after work, of course, he brought all the staff together and he said, I've decided, he said, that young Mr. Day here, he said, has shown that, he's capable of becoming assistant manager. So he said, I've decided to elevate him to assistant manager. And he said, of course, that's a little bit more money. 22 and sixpence a week.
Gee, you're going to get to that basic wage eventually, aren't you? Which I'm really crawling there. How did your boss take that? Because, I mean, it's all very well him being hard on you when you're just a shop assistant, but now you're assistant manager, he can't be that hard on you, can he?
That's right.
It must have annoyed him intensely.
Look, we had the most simplistic booking system that I've ever seen. Look, it would leave these computers for dead. It didn't last very long.
Mm.
Even though old Dick, the manager, used to get a fortnight's holiday at half pay in those days.
Very nice.
And so he took a fortnight off, which left me in charge of the... There was three girls on the delicatessen side and there was... three males on the grocery side. So it left me in charge of the lot, I got through that all right and, kept the pay up to them and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, but then old Dick, the manager, came back and, I'd shifted a display on the counter and it wasn't to his liking and he tore into me about it,
One has a suspicion that he was going to find something wrong somewhere.
Well,
anyway.
This is right. Yes. He was going to get rid of me somewhere along the line.
Yes.
Anyway, he got rid of me all right. I told him what he could do with his job. Collected me pay that weekend and put me tools in a sugar bag and hopped on the push bike and went. That was on the Friday night I left.
Mm.
Saturday morning I took off with the push bike and Monday morning I was working on the aerodrome at Corowa.
Good Lord. Hey, that's quite a distance away.
Yeah.
You bicycled all that, did you?
Yeah, yep.
Wow.
And I was working as a carpenter.
Okay.
And I was 16 at the time.
Yes.
But I'd put my age up to 19.
Oh, okay.
Because I could get away with it. I was big enough
and
so forth. And the examination to see whether you're a carpenter or not was to make a saw stool, a wooden saw stool. The legs are splayed mm-hmm. and the angle is the other mm-hmm. way too and so forth. So anyway, I made one and The boss says, can you make another one the same? He said, I want them.
So you definitely got the job.
I definitely got the job. And here's me as a 16-year-old, acting as a 19-year-old.
Yes.
And within a fortnight, I had a gang working under me.
Good Lord. So all those skills and things you picked up when you were a young boy learning how to build the houses from plans.
That's right.
That all came into play at that point.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Anyway, most of the work was boxing for concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Concrete floors in the hangars, and then they put us out on pillboxes. They were 5 miles out from the aerodrome.
Okay.
They were gun emplacements virtually for anti-aircraft guns.
Yes.
But they all had to be done in reinforced concrete, of course.
Of course.
So, we'd go out with a truckload of material and dump it off on the ground, and the truck would disappear, and I'd build a pillbox to the plane. And some of the blokes that reckoned they were carpenters, fair dinkum, they couldn't even drive a nail.
Were you getting the basic wage by now?
No.
No.
I was getting £7 a week.
Oh, you're getting over it. About time. No,
it was a 10-hour week, 6 days a week. And, of course, I was fit as a mallee bull, you know.
Yes.
And after I'd been there a couple of months, they were having trouble. They were scooping out the runways to a depth of 4 feet, which is just over a metre.
Mm.
And then they were filling them with stone and so forth, and then concreting the top to handle the heavy aircraft. And, of course, it was all done with horses and scoops.
Yes, yes.
And they couldn't find enough people that could handle a team of horses. Well, I could handle a team of horses, and I'd learnt that when I was only a little
tagger. Yeah, that's right, with Dad.
And, so I used to do a 4-hour shift 3 times a week at night time.
This is in addition to the day job?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Driving this team of 8 horses. And we had carbide flares. You know, if you mix carbide with water, it becomes a gas.
Yes.
These flares, they have a round tank thing with a pipe up and a burner on top, and then they had a reflector behind the burner. And, they had them dotted around all over the place. And the horses didn't like going too close to them, might add.
Yes.
But anyway, down and up and down and up through the runways.
Gosh.
And so I used to do that, and of course I used to get overtime for that.
Remember then.
Remember, remember.
Our love is in the past.
Oh,
has it gone so fast? Why couldn't our love last?
I'm broken
hearted now. Since we have parted now, my remember then.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, featuring the life and times of older Australians.
I remember the first fortnight's pay I brought home after I started on the team job was £39.
Whoa, that was a fortune, wasn't it?
It was a fortune.
It was a fortune.
And so I took that home and, well, we put a veranda across the back of the house with that. But that didn't last all that long, and they said to me, I turned 17, so I got my driver's licence. You can do that legally during the war at 17 because so many men were away in the war.
Anyway,
I got my licence and I bought a four-cylinder Chev utility.
You must have been so proud of that.
1927 model it was. And so then I decided I'd better have a caravan to go with it. So I got another axle and out of a wreck. And so I'm building a caravan, and of course quite a bit of the material was coming off the job. And
of course.
And I thought, you know, I was running pretty dangerously close, I thought. Anyway, one day I'm out at the, I'm working on a pillbox, and this car arrives. Bloke gets out. He said, "You're wanted at head office."
Whoops.
Knock off time tonight. Anyway, I thought, oh God, they've sprung me.
Yep, sounds like it. But
anyway, a truck arrived. We all went in, straight into the boss's office. "Oh," he said, "we heard you're building a caravan." I said, "Oh, God.
Bloody heck, they know everything."
Really got me.
They got you, yeah.
And I said, "Yes." And he says, "Is it to a livable stage?" And I said, "Yes." "Well," he said, "you might be just the man we're looking for."
You weren't expecting that.
No, well, certainly wasn't. Anyway, he said, "We're starting a job at Mulwala."
Okay.
"Yeah, we're starting a job at Mulwala," he said, "and we want somebody to put up the first hut to house the first gang to go in." "Oh," he said, "if you can camp out," he said, "you'd be the ideal person."
Yeah.
Well, over I go. Nobody would give me material, even though I had number one priority and so forth. And so anyway, I got in touch with the boss again. "Oh," he said, "I'll soon fix that." He was over next morning and he set up a trust account for me. I was the only signatory to it. Now, how many would do that?
No. Not today. And in those days, with money so tight, they were showing a lot of faith in you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got the hut built in pretty fair time too, and they sent a gang over of concreters to concrete the floor, and the first gang arrived. Well, I worked there for a few months on various carpentry jobs and so forth, and then they got timber out of a garage building that they'd wrecked down along the Murray there somewhere, and they decided to put it into fly-wire doors because there was the factory was going to be, or it was going to be quite a big building, and they would have needed a lot of fly-wire doors.
Yep.
So I was working with a bloke by the name of Peter Russell Clark.
That's a familiar name.
Isn't it?
Him?
No, it wasn't him.
I was going to say he wouldn't
I'd say it was either his father or his grandfather.
Right.
And anyway, I was working with him, and He was the union rep when I was working with him. Terrific bloke and all the rest of it. And a very good tradesman. But all this big timber had to be ripped with a handsaw to get inch-thick boards.
Oh, see?
And so I spent a while doing that. And then they come to me one day and they said, you've still got the caravan? And I said, yeah. Well, they said, we've got another job starting at Shepparton. I said, that's more my line because I lived from Shepparton.
Mm.
Anyway, that was Radio Australia.
Oh, okay. So you were part of building the original Radio Australia complex?
I was first man on the job.
That's quite an achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, so I had to build an office and a storeroom, and then later on I had to extend the storeroom, and then I worked as a carpenter around the job quite for a few months, and all of a sudden the union turned up. They said, we've been looking at the books and you're 19. And I said, yeah, nearly 20 now.
Mm.
And you can't be working as a carpenter because you wouldn't have had time to do an apprenticeship because it was a four-year apprenticeship.
Yeah, but hang on.
And you had to stay at school till 14, so that would have made a 18 by the time you finished your apprenticeship, and I'd been working for in the Allied Works Council, Civil Constructional Corps. I'd been working there for 18 months.
Yes.
So I was too young. So I had to be put off as a carpenter. Anyway, the foreman, when he heard about it, he said, don't take any notice, Bill. He said, I can't have you doing carpentry work. But he said, I can promise you that whatever work you're doing, you'll still be getting the same wages. So quite a few jobs, brickies, labourer, and all that sort of thing, you know. And
what a shame you'd built up all those skills and you couldn't use them.
Yeah, that's right. And anyway, while I was on that job, the army caught up with me.
I wondered if that was going to happen. When you mentioned you turned 17, I thought, gee, you're getting close to the war.
Well, you see, it was 18 to 45. Mm. They wanted everybody.
Mm.
So, anyway, I...
So they took you in?
Yep, they took me in.
Where did you do your basic training?
Cowra, and I was there when the prisoner of war broke out. And I'd just finished Bren gun training, and they hauled me over there, so I was up on the hill facing down to where the POW camp was.
Mm.
And I was pouring the bullets into them.
So you were actually involved?
I was involved in the prison breakout.
Right.
And
Were there many... I mean, it's something that we weren't taught at school about the Cowra breakout.
Little
bits in movies, but not much fact.
No.
Were there many Australian guards there, given the number of prisoners?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was quite a few. Well, when the prisoners got out, they went straight through the guardhouse and they killed everybody in it.
Right.
And plus the guards too. And you know, they'll tell you that, there was only 13 prisoners of war killed. 13, me hat. They were racing up to the barbed wire entanglements and the barbed wire was coiled and they were four coils, three coils, and two coils. So, you know, it was pretty high.
Yeah.
And they just raced out from the huts, laid down beside the wire, committed harakiri.
Really?
And they put a bridge or ramp up and over the wire.
Of bodies?
Of bodies, yeah.
Oh, goodness.
And then they just ran over the... Well, they run to the top and then jump. And so there was a lot more than 13 died.
Why do you think the story is that there was only so few killed?
Ah, look.
What benefit?
That was propaganda. Yeah. They didn't want to think that there was any great number of them able to get out, you know.
Right.
Do join Bill and I next week for the conclusion of his story. It's quite a revelation as Bill shares some revealing information about the sinking of HMAS Sydney by the German raider, the Cormorant. And his information is first-hand, straight from the mouth of his mate Mick, who was a sailor on the Cormorant that Bill befriended while working at the Murchison intern camp. Next week, Bill Day on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.